May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Amen. So from time to time, when I'm walking down the street in our neighborhood, or halfway through getting a haircut, when I bump into a postal worker delivering the mail, or someone calls the church office to ask about a wedding, I am asked a certain question that tends to recur. What are you, exactly? As in, what do I call you? Are you a priest, a pastor, a minister, father, Reverend Greg? And I often give the useless answer, yes. Yes, I am a priest, albeit not a Roman Catholic priest, hence the confusing shape of the collar. Yes, I'm the pastor of this church, and yes, of course, I'm a minister. To most people, after all, that's what minister means, an ordained clergy person in a Protestant church. But in its most basic sense, ministry doesn't mean ordained ministry in a Protestant church. It means service. And the Episcopal Church believes and has tried to emphasize, especially in recent years, that all of us, ordained clergy or lay people, are called to serve in some way. And so if you turn in the Book of Common Prayer to our catechism, as I'm sure you often do, you will find that it asks, who are the ministers of the church? And it answers, the ministers of the church are laypersons, bishops, priests, and deacons. It's a nice order, right? Clergy aren't the only ones who serve the church and the world in the name of Christ. Lay people have their own essential ministry. The BCP says, to bear witness to Christ wherever they may be, to carry on Christ's work of reconciliation in the world, and to take their part in the life, worship, and governance of the church. So congratulations, you're doing it right now. This part is the life and worship of the church. And if you stay for the annual meeting this morning, that's governance checked off too. And while I'll do more than my fair share of talking this morning, our annual report is full of shorter reports that reflect the fact that the ministry of this church is our ministry and not my ministry. And I commend to you especially those reports that aren't commented on aloud from the lectern during the meeting, all the small ways in which the people of this community serve the church and the world. And so I want you to think this morning, what is your ministry? What is the way that you try to love people in this world? How do you participate in God's work of reconciliation? How are you a witness to Christ's love for the world in a way that may never have seemed to you to be a ministry, or in a way that explicitly is? Because I see in this gospel reading three moments of what the experience of ministry is like. And I want to invite you to consider, as I share how I see these connecting to my experience of ministry, what that has to do with your own experience of loving and serving God and your neighbor in this world. So first in the gospel this morning, we see Jesus navigating this dynamic of distance and closeness in his work. Jesus stands on the beach trying to teach to a crowd. He's down on their level. And I picture the geometry of it. If you picture someone on the shore, right? If there's a crowd pressing in on them, he can only see maybe 10 or 15 faces. He can only speak to so many people at once. The physics of sound mean their bodies will actually block his voice from going to the crowd behind. And this crowd is pressing in. And I almost get the sense of him being pushed closer and closer and closer to the water's edge. And then he has an idea. He does something different as the hubbub of the crowd trying to get closer to him threatens to drown out what he's trying to say. I wonder if you've ever felt this way. Is the urgent noise of the world ever so loud that you can't hear yourself think? Does the crowd of urgent tasks ever press in on you so closely that you can't see the big picture anymore? Even if your calendar is more empty than full, it's possible to be crowded in by your own thoughts or by the news. And it's true, I think, for all of us that our ability to love and serve in our own ways can be drowned out by 1,000 small demands. So take note of what Jesus does. He steps back. He boards the boat. He puts some barrier, some boundary between himself and the crowd. And from up there on the deck, he can see them in a new way. He can see more of them. He can speak to more of them at once. And he can be heard by all of them. I think it's an important skill for any of us who try to serve, sometimes to step back in order to really engage. This is not leading up to any kind of announcement, by the way. You all give me plenty of room, both metaphorically and literally. The second scene captures a very different feeling, but one that I think also occurs for many of us. This sudden lurch from unfortunate scarcity to dangerous abundance. Jesus finishes teaching, and he tells Simon to head out from the shore to deeper waters and to cast his nets. Now, they've been fishing all night, and they haven't caught a thing. And that's not good, but it's not the end of the world. Fish aren't only eaten fresh. They can be salted or smoked or pickled. If you spend one night on the boat and you catch no fish, you still have something to eat, let alone something to sell. You're not going to starve. A month or a year with no fish, that's a problem, but a night is just annoying. A day with too many fish is actually a bigger problem for these fishermen. Simon starts to catch so much that his nets are beginning to break. And if you break your nets, of course, you have no fish and you have no net. You have some capital expenditures coming along for you. So the other boat comes over to help, and now the problem is even worse because not only are there so many fish that the nets begin to break, but the boats begin to sink. And this is really bad because Jesus had called them out into the deep water, and I suspect that several of these guys can't swim. We see, after all, what happens when they try to walk on the water later. And I think, again, there's a lesson for us here. How often have you worked for a long time with relatively little visible reward or fruit on something, and then found, all of a sudden, that everything is happening at once, and found that you weren't ready for that opportunity for something to work out? Our lives are organized for the everyday and not for great success. And sometimes if we can't handle that sudden opportunity, we don't only miss out on it, but our boats begin to sink. I think of this in the context of a church that's growing, right? Where one of the things that all of us who have been here longer have to make sure we do is to welcome people who are newer, to not let people feel like they're falling through the cracks. There is a certain danger in a community growing so fast that people begin to feel like they're not being brought in. I don't mean to call anyone a fish. It's, you know, a metaphor. I think it's true for nonprofits like our clothes closet, right, which receives such a huge volume of donations that it takes a significant amount of work to sort and process them in order to give them back away. I think it's true for many parents who spend so much time bouncing from one good thing to another good thing with their kids that too many good things become a bad thing. When our nets are so full of fish that our boats begin to sink, it can feel like too much of a good thing. And so we come to my final and favorite scene. Peter, dear, dear Peter, is amazed, and he throws himself down at Jesus' knees. And he says, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." He cannot believe that this magnificent gift has been given to him, and he is, and his boat is, not enough to handle it. But the main benefit of being learned in Greek is that you get to enjoy the funny parts of the Bible, and I'll share that with you, because the humor here doesn't quite come through in translation. Our translation says that Peter falls down at Jesus' knees. But that isn't quite right. There's a preposition that we miss. Peter falls toward Jesus' knees. And there's an ancient practice that you see in Homer and elsewhere of somebody grasping the knees of another person in supplication, throwing themselves down and wrapping them around their legs. "Have mercy on me. Get away from me, Jesus, for I am a sinful man." And there's comedy here. "Go away from me, Lord," Peter says, falling toward Jesus' knees. And I imagine Jesus thinking, "If I went away from you, Peter, I would fall down because you've wrapped yourself around me. But what does Jesus say instead? Be not afraid. From now on, you will be fishers of men. There's something here. When Peter feels inadequate, when confronted with the task at hand and the abundance of God's grace, what does Jesus do? Not condemn him, not even forgive him, but invite him into something even bigger. How could I be enough for this situation, Peter thinks, in which God has placed me? How could I be enough for the world in front of me and the work I have to do? How could I be enough to deserve the amazing things God has given me? In my thoughts as we left the hospital with Murray for the first time, are you really going to send us home alone with this? And yet God draws us in with this paradox of grace. God's goodness and perfection are more than enough, no matter how inadequate or imperfect we may feel. God doesn't punish us for loving or serving one another imperfectly. God invites us into even greater things. And so when we fall toward God saying we are not enough, God gives us an even greater task than the one we have. From now on, you will be fishing for people. So maybe you wrote one of those small reports in our annual report. Maybe not. Maybe you're just passing through today. But whoever you are as much a minister of this church as I am. Whoever you are, God has some way for you to love and serve the people around you. Some way for you to bear witness to the love of Christ in whatever context that may be. And when you find yourself serving, when you find yourself doing your best to love the people you find in front of you, this is my prayer. That you may have the space to step back from the shore onto the boat and take a breath. That when your nets begin to overflow, you do not sink. And that no matter how much you may feel that you are not quite enough, you fall not away from but toward the God who loves you and trusts you and is inviting you into even greater things. Amen.